Hi guys, this is filmmaker Daniel Lear. We're very excited that we have Leslie Brown tonight. She's a casting director. She's a casting specialist, a casting genius. She's gonna give us some amazing insights on how we can cast the right actors for our story, get the best performances out of them. Well, I'm gonna start off with, why do they say it's all about casting, Leslie?
Oh, well, thank you for that wonderful introduction, Daniel. I do appreciate it. And I'm so happy to be here and, you know, provide whatever insight I can. I've been casting for 17 years and I do a lot of short films, public service announcements, commercials. I've done, you know, a handful of feature length projects, but all the stuff I do is independent. A large part of it is non-union. I do some SAG stuff, but, you know, I'm not a studio person, so everything that I say to you is through that lens of finding talent for an independent story, because I think very often it's about the passion of the project. It's not necessarily about the paycheck of the project. So for me, I'm going to be speaking from that angle and from that approach. And why they say it's all about casting is because, you know, if you're trying to tell a story, the storytellers are the main ingredients, right? And that's just what it comes down to. So you can have a beautiful set and you can have beautiful cinematography and you can have beautiful direction, you can have beautiful music and wardrobe and makeup and hair. But if your actor is flat, it just doesn't come to life. Or if the actor is wrong for the role, it just doesn't come to life. Or if there's something distracting about the actor, they might be right for something, but not for this. Then it's just, it pulls you out of the story. So it's all about story, and you want somebody who, you know, it goes back to the days before we even had films. It was a storyteller, right? You want to hear what's happening, you want to see what's happening, you want to be able to envision it and get taken away. And so that's why finding the right talent for the role is the first step.
Well, that was absolutely mind-blowing. That was really, really special. I'm very passionate about casting. I really do feel like it's the foundation of great storytelling. I had a question for you. In terms of like understanding the basics, union, non-union, can you explain that for independent filmmakers and sort of new filmmakers, like how that differentiates and what it means to do a non-union or a union project?
I will, to the best of my ability, sure. So you have a Screen Actors Guild, and then you also have the Directors Guild and the Writers Guild and the Producers Guild. And there's, you know, the unions like to work together. You have the Teamsters, which is called IASI. And when you do a project that's union, the agreement is that they're all kind of holding hands with each other to be part of this project. That's the general concept, right? So they have their rules about how many hours you can work and what the minimum is that you can pay and what kind of set environment it's supposed to be, and safety protocols and all of these things that you have to adhere to. And that comes with a dollar sign.
Excellent.
You know?
Excellent. So
simplest way of putting that. So when you want to do an independent film, that's when you say, hey, I've got a camera, let's make a movie. And you're going to kind of go outside the box and tell your story the way you want to, because you don't have the budget to do it. You know, it's kind of like, do you have a band in your garage, or are you going to like record in a rehearsal studio? Do you have, you know, are you an office in your garage, you know, or are you now Apple? You know, it's like you start somewhere and then you grow to into the next thing.
That is so awesome. Do you find that there's better actors, like the quality of actors in the union, for example, the Screen Actors Guild, or can you find great actors in non-union as well?
There's amazing actors that are union and there's amazing actors that are non-union. And then there's really bad actors that are union and there's really bad actors that are non-union. So they come in both varieties. And I love the union actors, because what they do bring to the table most of the time is a level of professionalism and expectation of, you know, like they kind of come to the set already knowing what the protocols are. And I'm not thinking about quarantine or COVID or virus protocols. I mean, when you check in and where you're supposed to go and whose job is what and where they're supposed to be and how they're supposed to be prepared and what, you know, what's expected when the camera's rolling and when the camera's not rolling. They kind of already come to the set because they've gotten to that point in their career where they've been on set enough times, and now that they're union, that level of professionalism is expected. That's not to say that somebody who's non-union doesn't bring that, but if they have less experience and they're non-union, they may not have that professionalism on set because they just don't have the experience behind them. Doesn't mean that they can't act. This is the difference between union and non-union, in broad strokes, is how much it's going to cost you, how much will you sell your project for because you have that union person in it, and then what's the level of professionalism they bring or not. The acting part, I didn't mention that.
Wow.
I'm saying that's the difference between union and non-union for me. It's not just about the talent. I've met some amazing talents that are non-union.
Wow.
And I've met some disappointing actors that were union. Wow. But I've met some amazing actors that were union, and I've met some disappointing actors that were non-union. It's a yes to both, on both sides.
Amazing. Do you have any recommended sites for independent filmmakers to do casting on, to submit their projects?
Well, first of all, I'm going to tell you, you should hire a casting director.
Yes, that's the best. That's the best you could possibly do.
Yes, hire a casting director. But short of that, if you can't hire a casting director, let me tell you what a casting director does, and then you can decide that, you know, how you want to do that yourself, right?
Yes.
It's just like, if you don't have a set designer and you got to design the set yourself, there you are with a paintbrush at 2 o'clock in the morning because you're filming at 8, right? You got to get it done because you're shooting. The same thing with casting. If you can't bring in a casting director for your independent project, then you got to find where the actors are that are the type of actors you need for your project. And that's important, because I did a public service announcement many years ago where we were doing a lot of activities in the shots required a lot of people moving around on things, whether they were surfing or skateboarding or riding their bicycle or skydiving. I'm not going to find those people on traditional casting websites. I have to go look at where they are and go talk to them where they are. And that's what I would do as a casting director. So I went down to Venice Beach and I hit up all of the guys that were sidewalk vendors and said, do you know this guy? Because 3 weeks prior, I just happened to be there with my family, and I saw somebody doing tricks on a bike who was, you know, he's playing for tips. And we tipped him and I remembered him. And then 3 weeks later, I just happened to need him for something I was casting. But he didn't have a phone number and he wasn't on a website. This was before TikTok and Instagram. And so I had to go down there, park my car, pay $10 for parking, and go pass out my business cards to all of these guys that were sitting there with their, you know, their blankets selling their knickknacks, and say, if you see this guy, you know, I didn't even have a picture of him on my phone. I was just describing him. And then about 4 days later, he called me up and said, hey, my friend said you were looking for me. And I ended up getting him into my project. I say that because that's an extreme example of specifically what you need, where do you go get it, right? But if you're just doing a film and it's a student project or it's a short film and you just need some, you know, like the bulk of the actors that are in LA are between 18 and 24. If you're in LA and that's what you need, then there's traditional sites that you can go to. You can go to Actors Access, you can go to Casting Frontier. I love Casting Frontier because their interface and their back end, the side of it where you can do auditions and upload things and manipulate it yourself, is way easier than some of the other sites, but they just don't have the same volume in their database. You can go to Casting Network, which used to be called LA Casting, but they're now Casting Network because they have a branch in New York, a branch in LA, a branch in San Francisco, and I think also in Australia, all within the network of Casting Network. And then if you have the patience to work their site, you can use Backstage. I've gotten some amazing talent from backstage.com, but their user interface and their server is very, very tired and slow and cumbersome. And it takes a long time for pages to load from one to the next, for it to scroll down, for the thing to pop up. And then, you know, you can't do bulk action, so it's just one at a time. And it's very, very, very tedious. But it's also, they've got really good talent. So it's kind of a tough one. Like, do you have the patience to really sit there and look through it? And I've had three directors tell me, can you just figure it out for me? And they give it back to me because Backstage is that much of a nuisance. But Backstage, you know, they started off as a publication in print. And then when everything went online, they did too. So they have this following and they have this reputation. They just didn't have the innovation and the technology to kind of support the new trends, which is why I like Casting Frontier, because Casting Frontier talk to casting directors, talk to agents and managers, talk to casting talent, and they put it all together. And we look at it, it's like, wow, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. It's just, they don't have the same following in the same database.
That is so absolutely helpful. Now, I forgot, I have to, like, I'm just going to apologize. Yes, I have to tell you, the projects that I've really, really, really enjoyed in terms of talent were ones where I had a casting director. I think they are so brilliant at basically presenting you with the best possible talent for the project. They have such an amazing sense of actors and their capabilities and if they're right for something and they're really able to look at a headshot and understand the experience of the actor and figure out if it's going to work with the character or how different characters will work together. Can you talk more about what a casting director does for a film?
So in the end, you might only have, let's say it's a short film and you have 12 characters. You might need to see 120, you might need to see 600, you might need to see, I'll give you an example. A short film that I did, there was 11 characters in it. I split one of the characters because it made more sense for that role to be played by two people. And so it ended up being 12 characters, and we had over 5,000 submissions. I generate that kind of interest in the project. So the choices are huge and you get to really pick what you want. We didn't see all 5,000. I did. I saw their headshots. I saw every one of those faces for all of those roles. And I didn't post for 12 roles. I posted for 6 or 7 because when I'm looking for roles that are kind of similar, like in this particular project, there was 3 main girls. I posted for 2 of the main girls because I knew that they were all kind of similar in age. And I didn't want to have one girl submit 3 times. I knew that I could break off and say, you know, we have this other role that you might be interested in that you're a fit for. Will you come in and read for this? And all the actors will say yes. So I don't always post for every single role that I'm casting for. And I create a campaign. As a casting director, that's where I live and that's where I breathe. I'll post a notice and then I'll wait a little bit. Then I'll post another notice and I'll wait a little bit. And I'll post another notice and I'll wait a little bit. And before you know it, after a week or two has gone by, actors and agents and managers start to go, wow, you're everywhere. This project must be really a big deal, right? So it gives it a chance to kind of grow and become more and more interesting. So you get more and more submissions. If you're directing, producing, writing, casting, filming, and acting in your own project, it's a little hard to do all that work that I just described.
Leslie, this is unbelievable. I remember I was working on a commercial, and just the way that you phrase things and you understood how to present the project, it was a game changer. But how do you look at 5,000 headshots and be able to differentiate amongst that?
Well, first of all, they don't all come in at once. That was the total number at the end, okay? And I look at them as they come in and I compartmentalize them as they come in. And usually on the first day, you'll get like maybe 20 to 30% of your submissions will come in on that first day or second day. And then they start to trickle and it starts to build and it starts to come from other sources and other sites. Because I don't just post on one site, but what I'll do is I'll go, oh, this one's a possibility. And I put them over into the maybe pile or to the yes pile. And then the ones that are definitely a no, you can just put them aside. And to be honest, you can really tell from, you know, you can tell from a headshot if the person that submitted is even close to what you're looking for. You know, if you've got to have 2 characters and one's the parent and the child is in their 20s, well, the parent has to at least look like they're 40. And if they don't, then they go in the no pile because they just don't, it doesn't work. So it's easier to eliminate. Then once you've gotten rid of the most of the ones that don't fit, then you have a smaller pile.
Okay, so Leslie, to you, what does a headshot tell you just on the picture alone?
Oh gosh, a lot. Okay, I have to think about how I'm going to answer this because I know I'm going to upset somebody who's going to hear this later. And so I've got to try to upset as few people as possible. But here's what a headshot tells me. Okay, first of all, I can look at a headshot and I can go, that person looks like that. Or I can look at a headshot and go, that person worked really hard to make themselves look that way. And they're not going to walk in the room looking like that because it's doctored. It's this, it's that, you know, if it's a woman and she has too much makeup on and too much glamour, she's not going to walk in the room looking like that. Right. Or if it's an older person and they've done a lot of retouching, I can go, okay, they're not going to walk in the room looking like that. And if it's a younger person, I still need to kind of ask, well, how much have they aged? Are they still 12 or are they now 18 and they're sending in a 12-year-old headshot because they just didn't get new photos? I can also tell from a headshot if a person brings it or if they had a bad photographer and they have to be directed. And here's what I mean by that. When you get somebody who just smiles with their mouth but not with their eyes, they're not bringing it. And the director of that photo isn't able to get it out of them, which means they're not going to be super directable because they don't have a lot of experience on how to perform in front of a camera, and especially for commercial. Because for commercial, it has to be It has to be a natural smile, and we want to see your teeth, and we want to see that light in your eyes, but we don't want to see your tonsils. You know what I mean? We want to see your teeth, but not your tonsils, right? We want to see the light in your eyes, but we don't want it to look fake when someone just pulls their cheeks apart. It doesn't look like a smile. And you can see that in a photo, right? And then you can also see in a photo, if it's a theatrical photo, if they don't know what to do. A theatrical photo is, so you have your dramatic, your theatrical, your serious one, and then you have your light, your commercial, your smiling one. Those are the two main photos that you start with, right? You can always add more and you can do more, but those are the two basic tools that you need. Can you be serious and pull out an emotion, and can you be commercial and sell something, right? And if you're looking at a person's headshot and they don't have any expression in their eyes and they're just being still, kind of deadpan, they're not bringing it. You look at a picture with Robert De Niro, and if it's not, I'm not talking about a smiling picture, I'm talking about a theatrical picture. You can look in his eyes, you can look in his expression, and you feel something. You almost hear something through the photo, even though he's not saying anything because it's a two-dimensional image. That's a good photo. You can just imagine one in your head of Robert De Niro, and you know that it's a good theatrical photo because there's something he brings to it. And the photographer captures that, and the photographer's job is to just capture what you're already doing, right? And if an actor is doing nothing and they're waiting to be told, I can see that in the photo, that's going to translate to that now they're on set, they don't know what to do because they don't bring it, they don't bring that preparation. The other thing I can tell is, I can tell from the quality of the photo who's really invested in their career. I don't mean serious or not serious. You're either in it because you're creative and you just want to tell stories, or you're in it because you want to do it as a business and you want to make a living and be successful at it, right? There's the two extremes. I'm an artist or I'm a business person, and I'm going to use performing as a means to get there. And if you've invested your time and you've invested your money in how do I perform in front of the camera? How do I take a good headshot? Let me go to casting director workshops. Let me go to online acting classes. Let me do whatever. And then you get in front of that camera and you take a good headshot. I can see that you've done your homework. I can see it in the headshot that you've done your homework because it shows. Versus having someone go, okay, well, just take a picture of me. This is what I look like. And there's no, it's flat, right? So they're not that invested in it. And to be honest, I can see that there are some who they'll spend $800 on their headshots because that's what they're going to go to the top photographers, and the top photographers might get a lot out of them. But then if you look a little deeper, you might see, well, they spend a lot of money on their headshots, but do they have any background? Do they have any experience? Or is this a photographer that got this out of them, or do they really have the talent? Sometimes there's a gray area, but that should kind of tell you the main beats that I see in a headshot. I can see if they are really present and they're bringing it. I can see if they have experience. I can see if they are invested in this as an activity and that they're taking it seriously. And I can see if they're directable. I'm amazing. I can see all of that.
You might as well be a sorcerer.
I just listened to what I just said out loud. I was like, wow, okay, I'm pretty confident about it. But yeah, there are times when I fail. I have to admit, you know what I mean? I see 5,000 photos, and is it possible that I miss somebody? Sure, it's possible that I miss somebody. I'm not perfect, you know? 5,000 is a lot of faces to look at for 12 roles. And I could have, I'm sure that I missed on some of it. I'm just, you know, I have to step down off my soapbox a little bit.
This is I'm learning so much. This is incredible. Okay, good. So let me tell you about some things where I've made mistakes, Leslie, and I want to get your feedback on this. I think mistakes are really important because then you learn from them and you become a better filmmaker. Sure. I've had a couple of times where I had someone do a really, really, really strong audition compared to other actors. And I really thought they were perfect for the role. And then when we started doing the project, they just weren't able to bring that same level of performance onto the set. What do you have to say about that?
Tell me, what did you learn from that?
I learned that I need to not just see someone once, I need to see them multiple times and see that they're consistent, and that they're not only consistent, but they're able to do this part of the script, which is dramatic, and this part, which is funny, and this part, which is like silent, and this part, which is, you know, introspective. I need to be able to really test that person out, is what I learned.
Yes, that's valid. That is definitely valid. So when choosing which pages of your script you're going to use for auditions, you want to pick two extremes. You want your actor I find that this gets very well received. This is loved and appreciated by actors. Oh, I get to be here, and then I get to arc and be here. Okay, good. Let me show you I can do that, right? Is at the start of the story and then at the end of the story. So those are usually the two things that I will pull from a script, or some intense scene and then some light scene, wherever they fall in the story. If it's a longer project, you might not be at the beginning or the end or whatever, but you pick two that are going to show those extremes. And then no matter how amazing that performance is, you redirect it. No matter how amazing it is, you redirect it in the audition process.
Does that mean give them some direction and see how they respond to it?
Yep, absolutely. Have to give them redirection. And you can validate, you can acknowledge, you can say, hey, that was really great. I think that was a perfect performance. And if it was up to me, I wouldn't change anything. But just for fun, why don't we try it where you do the scene as if the person's really got to go to the bathroom because they're supposed to get from here and the bus stop is too far. And that now use that energy in the scene and just run with it. Or you pick something crazy, you know, that you may or may not actually use. Because here's what you run the risk of. An over-rehearsed actor, when they come to an audition, they might nail it, but you don't know how many hours they spent working with their manager or their spouse or their family member to rehearse to get to that perfect audition. And that's what you're missing. Because if it takes them 8 hours to get to that perfect audition and then you're on set, you don't have 8 hours for them to rehearse the next scene. You need them to throw down. But you don't know that unless you give them a redirection and see how they take it. And the other thing that you want to be sure of is that when your actors are on set, it's organic, that there's interaction, there's vibrancy from other performers, there's vibrancy from the environment, there's this dynamic, you know, magic that happens. And can they live and play in that moment and act and react to the situation that they're given? You know, if it's a dramatic scene or if it's a romantic scene or if it's a comedic scene or if it's an intense, you know, tension building scene, how are they going to react to what's going on in that space? I'll give you an example of, okay, I'm going to date myself, but an amazing scene that got a really, really, really great performance. I don't fully agree with how it was achieved because I kind of learned about the backstory on it. But nevertheless, this is what happened. This scene in Kramer versus Kramer with Dustin Hoffman and Meryl Streep, and they're at a table. The table is right up against the wall, this little tiny table. There's not a lot of room for stuff going on. And they're having an argument, and it's about to be a divorce. Or it's I don't know if the divorce process has started, but it's about who's going to see the kid when. Oh, and Dustin Hoffman gets really mad. And he rehearsed something, but he didn't tell Meryl Streep what he was going to do. And he ended up slamming the table and it splashed the water on her and she had to stay in the scene and react to that. Now, it was incredibly moving because at the time I was young, so it wasn't, you know, divorce or marriage wasn't really my part of, I wasn't in that audience bracket, but, you know, looking at parents or looking at adults that were going through that tension and watching how that scene unfolded, I felt that her performance was stronger because she reacted to something he gave her. You know, he chose to do that and he got permission from the director to do that, but he did it without telling her he was going to, which was a little bit unfair. So in that situation, I go, go Meryl, you know, because she reacted and she stayed in the moment. And I've written for her as the actor in that scene. But on the other hand, he brought something that was, you know, innovative and original and improv, and it put the scene in a direction that she wasn't rehearsed on. So there's this thing that you, when you're on set, no matter how much you rehearse it, something's going to change. You as a director might have to go, okay, well, actually that light is burned out and we can't do the scene this way. We're going to reorient the whole thing because now we can't face the window. I'm just making something up, but you see those things happen. And so if you've got an actor who rehearsed one way and then you change it, you're not going to know that until you're on set in the moment. So you got to try that in the audition process.
Leslie, I'm literally like, my mind is blown. Like, you are so intelligent. Like, I'm like, this is incredible. Okay. So I learned my lesson about that. Like I told you, I, you know, brought someone on and I thought they were perfect. And then when we got to set, they weren't. And man, that made that film a lot more complicated to shoot. Let's talk about some other things. One other thing that I've done that was very successful is that in doing a romantic comedy, I cast the male and I brought the male with us to casting. And he basically did the scene with multiple females. And we found one where that had like the real chemistry was right between them. I found that to be successful. Is there any other things that you've used that you feel, you know, independent filmmakers can apply in the process of finding that perfect match or that perfect person for the role?
I think that you have to kind of look at it like it's a color palette. And I know that we don't really have physical headshots anymore, but I do like to put together, you know, this is what my whole cast would look like. And I'll take little thumbnails and I'll put them together in like a PowerPoint presentation, just to have like the six faces on a screen. If you're trying to cast any kind of relationship, whether it's a spousal relationship or a work relationship or, you know, romantic relationship, anything like that, you know, you kind of want to see, does this face look like it belongs to that face? Do these people look like their family? Do they look like they're romantically involved? Do they look like, you know, size-wise and emotion-wise and character-wise and age-wise, does this fit? Because it's really a puzzle. So I find that really helps, because sometimes you may fall in love with one, right? And you're just kind of, I like to use the word myopic, which is, you know, this tunnel vision where you're really looking, like you really, really, really want to cast this one person. But if you don't zoom out and see, okay, do these other characters fit around with that person visually, then you might miss something. And sometimes you run into favorites, you know, you have someone on your team who's got some weight and they say, you know, no, we have to use this particular person, and that's going to kind of guide the project. And you might have to, you know, make concessions because you've got this one person that you have to use for whatever political reason. Then you have to bring somebody in to work with them. I would say that your method of having the, once you've made one choice and you have them read with another person, I think that's a good way of working, but I would reduce it and just bring him in for callbacks with your favorite.
Wow, okay. That makes sense. That's beautiful. Now, there's a movie I really, really love called Babel by Iñárritu that won an Academy Award. And he basically went to this small town in Morocco, and he basically didn't half cast besides, you know, Brad Pitt and forget who was in that role exactly the name, but he basically had no cast. And in like a week, he had to basically cast all local people. I've seen some films like Kids where they're not real actors. It was like a, you know, sort of like, it felt like a documentary. It was done in the late 90s. Harmony Korine wrote the script and Larry Clark directed. How can you sometimes find people that are non-actors but are just so right for the role where, you know, you couldn't really get an actor to do that exact thing with total authenticity? Can you talk about, like, Fellini, for example, cast non-actors as well, like a lot. Do you have any advice for doing that?
Yeah, that's you gotta have sales skills for that.
You gotta have what?
You have to have sales skills, because you're selling your project to a person who doesn't know that they want to buy in. You know, when I put up an audition notice for a project and I say, "Dear actor, it's $125 a day, or it's $625 a day, or it's a buyout for this," they want the money. They're gonna come to me. They want to be in the project. But when you go to somebody who's an unknown, who's never been in a film before, you have to go to them and go, "So, I'm a real person. I'm not trying to scam you. This is a real film. We really have money. We're legit. You know, let me tell you about this film that I'm making and why you should be involved." You've got to have sales skills.
But how do you know that they're going to perform?
They have a certain level of confidence in their ability to communicate and control their environment.
Wow.
And that just doesn't go away when you put them in front of a camera. It doesn't go away when you put them in front of an audience. It doesn't go away when you put them in front of, you know, strangers. It's just there. It's natural, and you can see it. You can see a kid who's shy and they kind of hide behind their parents' leg. You can see somebody who's kind of withdrawn and, you know, insecure. And you can see somebody who's just like naturally comfortable in their skin and nothing really phases them. And
that's incredible. I was kind of blown away by Oliver Stone in the movie Any Given Sunday, which is about the game of football. And he basically said that he was casting non-actors in that film, but he felt as long as they were close enough to the role, like it was real to them, they experienced it, they lived it, he felt like they could really do it without too much trouble. Do you feel that's right?
Sure. You know, I think that's a stylistic choice. I think that, you know, there's some styles of acting training where you get so involved in the preparation of it that you become that character and you live and breathe that character, and you're not yourself while you're doing that role. And I don't necessarily subscribe to that. I don't think that that's healthy, because I think you should be able to play and then be done at the end of the day, you know, but I don't want to drop names, but there's enough actors in this industry where you go, oh my gosh, I can't believe they did that on set, because they were in their character when they weren't on in front of the camera, right? And so I think that what you're talking about is you're taking somebody who already is that character, so they're not really acting. You're just filming a documentary, and you're kind of guiding them to tell the story that you're telling. That's not my style. It doesn't mean that it's wrong. It doesn't mean that it's ineffective, and I'm not knocking it. I just don't know how to do that. That's not my comfort zone.
Okay.
Again, and I preface this whole thing with, I'm going to speak to tonight from the lens of what I do and what I know.
I love that. Oh. I love that.
And I say that because, you know, I do a lot of non-union stuff, a lot of short films, independent, you know, projects. I'm doing a series of public service announcements right now that's going to take me about 6 months to do. And I'm casting all real people. They're not actors. It's like reality TV, you know, and I have to pitch them and, you know, kind of massage the relationship and kind of get them familiar with what we're doing, get them to trust the film company, get them to see the work, get them to see the validity in it and the benefit to them and the benefit of the project. And it's like this big, long runway before we get a yes.
Wow.
But I'm good at that, you know, but I'm not casting a dance team to be a dance team in their situation that they would already be being a dance team, or football players in a football scene where they're already being football players. So that's just not something that I've done.
So with someone like that, you can't really do that redirect technique too much, right? Or can you?
You can, but it would be more about blocking and staging kind of direction, and not so much, I don't know, about emotion. It's hard to tell somebody, be enthusiastic, be cheerful, be, you know, this is a situation that has been being sad. If they're not comfortable already exercising that flexibility of portraying a character or portraying an emotion or portraying, you know, a struggle or a victory, you know, you have to bring that out of yourself. And if they're not already actors, then you have to go to that other method, which is surprise them so they react the way you want them to.
Wow.
You know, I've heard stories which I don't necessarily agree with, but it gets the result, you know, where of someone telling a kid that their puppy died and the kid is bawling, but they're filming a scene for some other thing. And at the end, they go, just kidding, your puppy's fine. So the kid was really crying. That's not acting. That's an emotional trauma. I don't do that. But it was effective. But I don't do that. So I don't know if I'm answering your question.
Yeah, that's
on
really
how
good.
You would how would you cast, you know, a real group of, you know, somebody who is real at what they do. Like, you want to cast a chef, for example, who's an angry chef, but he's kind of a roly-poly jolly guy. How do you get him to be angry? I don't know. Piss him off. You know?
Wow.
That's real, though. It's not acting, you know?
Oh, that's incredible. I really, really love that. Okay.
You don't have another question in the chamber.
Well, I'm just thinking about what you're saying, because it's very interesting. It's a very interesting subject, because, you know, that the subject of casting and acting is human relations. It's like, you know, understanding people and getting, how do you motivate someone to do something and to give it their best, and, you know, also in long hours of days, you know? So one thing that independent filmmakers, sometimes they're going at a project and, you know, they're already paying a cinematographer, they're already paying an editor, you know, a composer, but then they're like, can I get someone to act in my movie for free? Like, what should I pay them? Like, can you talk about that in the independent film process?
Sure, absolutely. The on-screen talent are the focal part of your storytelling. You're either gonna have a story told or you're not. And I have never worked on a project where the actors don't get paid. You know, they always get paid something. And that was the policy that I made for myself way, 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 way back at the beginning. I said, you know, I don't want to be that casting director who's constantly asking actors for favors to do something for free, because this is, you know, their livelihood and this is what makes or breaks the project. And the non-union guideline that I recommend is try to follow what the SAG minimums are, even though you're not SAG. So if the SAG minimum for an independent low budget or ultra low budget teacher is $125 minimum for an 8-hour day, even if you're non-union, you should pay that.
I agree with that.
And you won't get the residuals and you won't get the insurance and you won't get the health benefits and all this other perks that comes with being union, but at least you know you'll get your minimum of $125 a day when you go on and audition that role. SAG has really, really, really made it super easy to do an ultra, ultra low budget project and use SAG actors and use non-union actors. You just have to be willing to do the paperwork, and that's what takes time. And then you can use a mix of SAG actors and non-union actors, and you still pay them the $125 a day.
But if you're using any union actor, then you have to pay everyone their rate, correct? Or the minimum?
Which is $125.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. I want to open it up to see if anyone has any questions from our audience here about casting, about actors, maybe about how to get the best out of them. What are the questions out there?
Yeah, I have two questions.
Okay.
Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Yeah, so one of them is, what is the difference between multi-listing and being exclusive?
I don't think I've heard that term. Are you talking about agency representation?
Yeah. Isn't that similar to casting directing or?
Ah, okay. So there's an undercurrent. There's an undercut to that question, which is, what's the difference between, and I'm going to name them, casting director, agent, and manager. There's a casting director, and I am basically like a glorified human resources person. I'm the hiring manager. I'm not in a regular corporation. When you say, I want to go be a receptionist, or I'd like a job waiting table, there's a person who does the paperwork with you, looks at your resume, does an interview, and sends you on to the boss who does a second interview, who then hires you or does. That's my job, but in the entertainment industry. Okay. Now, an agent is somebody who represents you. They can negotiate contracts for you, and they get 10% of anything that you make in the state of California. That's the legal amount. Now, a manager is somebody who can take more money and spend more time with you to manage your career. They can help you build your resume. They can help you with publicity and public relations. They can help you with, you know, getting scripts in your hands and talking to directors and getting you at film festivals, but they kind of manage your career trajectory. And that's why they can take, you know, 10 to 20% of your pay. So a casting agent in California is a misnomer. There is no such thing. I do not get paid on actors getting paid. You can't pay me 10% of your pay. I'm not your agent. I don't represent you. I'm just a hiring manager. I'll bring you into audition. I'll take all your stuff. I'll present it to the director if I think he's what you're looking for. He'll interview you, and then you get booked on the job. When you get booked on the job, you get paid and you pay 10% to your agent. If your agent has that relationship with you where they have to be involved in sending you in for the auditions, and they have to have a relationship with me and say, hey, come and see my client, you know, and they have to do the work for you to get that 10%. Usually you have to look at the fine print on those contracts. In California, you can have an agent who represent you for commercial. You can have an agent who represent you for theatrical. You can have an agent who represent you for literary, et cetera. But you cannot have two agents representing you for the same category. You can have one agent who represents you for everything, or you can have one who represents you for each, but not two of the same kind of representation. You can't have two literary agents. You cannot have two commercial agents. That would be a multi-agency thing. But that doesn't have anything to do with casting. That has to do with your agency representation.
Now, when you say literary, Leslie, that's usually like they represent you for like writing scripts.
Sure. That's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Perfect.
How many actors do you know that are writing a script? All of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great. Great.
Yeah.
What kind of advice do you give your clients regarding making themselves more marketable?
That's a good question. And to be more marketable, you have to market yourself. And what I mean by that is your thumbnail photo. It really is a thumbnail when I'm looking on a screen, because it's all digital now. There's no physical headshots anymore. It's got to get me interested enough to look more, to look again, to go deeper, right? I told you in the first process, I'm going to take the ones that don't fit the criteria and I'm going to put them into the no bin, and then I'm going to be left with a maybe bin, and I'm going to reduce that down to a yes bin. And in that yes bin, I'm then going to go, what's more interesting about this person? And then I might look you up. And if it's at that point that I'm looking you up that I need to be able to find something. You're having a good website or being, you know, prolific on Instagram isn't going to help me find you. But it's when I look at your headshot and I go, who is this guy? And I want to see more, that I go, look, I better find something. So to be more marketable, you have to market yourself, right? So I want to see that you have a website. I want to see that you have, you know, a presence online that represents who you are, that you feel will get you the most work in your niche. If you're a, you know, a 50-year-old Caucasian woman, but you're competing against 18-year-old college DJs, they're just two different realms, right? So know who you are, know which lane you works best for you, and market yourself that way, you know, whatever that is, whether you're more musically inclined or you're more athletically inclined or you're more dramatically inclined or more commercially inclined or more comedically inclined, you know, you've got to kind of know. And this is my guiding principle on that. When you're trying to market yourself, what are the kind of jobs that make you happy? What are the kind of jobs that you just can't sleep because you're so excited about doing them, or you can't stop thinking about how you're going to do that scene or how you're going to get through this or how you're going to get through that, because it just gnaws away at you because you're so full of that creative, that those creative juices, that creative energy that just makes you go, oh my God, I could do the scene this way. And then we come in like this, and you just kind of like, it just gets your gears going. Do more of that and market yourself more in that lane, and you'll be successful in it. Don't let anybody tell you, oh, well, you're too much of a this and you need to be in a boy band, or you're too much of that and you need to be heavy metal. You know, if you like country music, play country music. And I'm talking about music because it's easier than putting actors into little boxes.
I have a conflict in this industry. And one of them is that you hear about filmmakers putting projects together, like independent films, and they're like, it's all about the value of the actor and, you know, are they bankable? And like, you know, I'm only going to cast them if they'll get me financing or distribution. And do you see people going after that and then like actually not ultimately finding the actor that's really right for the role? Or what do you think about that? They're not going to make their film until they find that actor that's bankable, that's famous. Like, what are your thoughts about this? If you care to respond.
Again, I'm probably going to piss off some people, so I apologize in advance for my strong views on this, but I do have some. And that is, that's an old model. It's an outdated model. It's not workable anymore. You can't go, well, let me get this person because they're going to sell my film if I have them in this, and I've just got to get them. What are you doing? Time is ticking and money is, you know, not being collected. You need to get a film made. You need to pick up the camera and go make your film. So I don't want to hear about how you got to have some famous actor in order to go make a movie. Pick up your camera and go meet it. The guy did it with Short Ends. Does anybody know what Short Ends are besides you, Daniel? Okay. So remember when film was actually tangible and it was film and it was on a reel, right? Yeah. And you had to keep it in a container and protect it from getting hit by the sun. Otherwise you're exposing it and then it was no good. Well, studios would make a film and they would use maybe 50% or 80% or 90% of that. And there would be some film left over. That's called the short end. You take that and you give it to some poor filmmaker and you go, here, see what you can do with that. So guess how many minutes you have? 2 minutes of film, maybe 10 minutes of film out of a 60-minute thing. Or I don't even know how long those reels were, Danny could probably say. But, you know, it's like 20 minutes of film and they used 80% of it. So you've got 2 minutes left or 4 minutes left that you can use to go and shoot your scene, one take, get it right. Then you got to switch it out and put in another one that's a little short end. It's like, it's really, really, really challenging to be able to do that. It's like, if you had your cell phone and you go, okay, I have 16 gigabytes on my phone and there's only a half a gig left, let's go make a movie. You know what I mean? You have to constantly delete stuff and put it on your hard drive and then go, okay, now let's do the scene again, right? That would be the equivalent of that. That's making a movie, right? You guys don't even need a film camera. You just need a hard drive, which you can get for $80 at Staples. Clean out your phone, go make a movie, get some free software and make a film. And then, you know, get your mom, well, not me, but your mom to invest in marketing your film and put it up there on film festivals and put it up there on the internet and get people to see that you did it, you know, and then get the notoriety and get the recognition. The landscape is totally different now. You do not need a celebrity to sell your film to get recognition, to get a Netflix deal, to get 1.5 million views on TikTok. No, you just need good content.
Okay, now devil's advocate, Leslie, devil's advocate.
I'm very passionate about this.
You're a producer too. How do you get investors to put in money if you don't have like something that's recognizable that a distributor wants?
Well, do you have a distributor?
Well, when you're going to people, because like, say you want to make a movie and the budget's like 600K or more, 500K or more, like how do you get an investor interested if you don't have talent?
So here's what I say. You got to take it from all the way at the very end. What do you want to have? Why are you doing this film? Where is it going to go? Who's going to see it? Before you even write the script, you have to have in mind where it's going to go. And then you go to that end point and you walk backwards and figure out how to start. And it's the only way you're really going to get to that destination. So you go to the distributors, you go to the movies that they're distributing, you see where they're being distributed that you want to make a movie like, and then you make friends with those people and say, what are you looking for? What kind of films do you, what kind of content do you need? Who do you need to have in them? And you've got to get that information, because no matter what your investor tells you, if your distributor won't buy it, you did all this work, you got this money from an investor, and you made a movie, you got a celebrity involved, and then you go to the distributor and they go, I can't sell this. That person's not popular anymore.
So I love you. I love you. This is great.
Hey, I went to, you know, the American film market and learned quite a lot those two times I went. So, yeah.
Amazing. Incredible. All right. But at the heart of it, I love just great, talented actors that are right for the role, that are right for the story, that are just fresh and original.
Yeah, that's what I like too. That's why I do the independent stuff. I do the stuff that's meaningful, not necessarily moneyful.
I've never heard that term, moneyful. I like it.
I made it up.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
Do past auditions affect your opinion of an actor during their current auditions?
Yes, I guess they do, because I would bring them in knowing that I had seen them before. Sometimes I don't remember that I've seen somebody because I've been doing this for 17 years and it might be many years since I saw them and they've changed and I've changed and the needs of the project are changed. And that can go kind of in either direction. It can either be a positive or it can be negative. Like, oh, I've seen this person before and they can't bring it. But I usually won't bring somebody in for an audition. And we're talking in-person auditions because now everything is digital. I've been doing digital for almost 3 years. Before the quarantine, I was doing digital auditions because I was doing international casting. So I kind of already got that groove down. But when we're talking about in-person auditions, where I have somebody in front of me, I wouldn't necessarily bring them into the room if I had seen them before without knowing that I had seen them before and wanted to see them.
Okay. So the second one is, what are you looking for when you ask an actor to improvise, and should actors audition or prompt it?
Well, let me clear that up. According to SAG guidelines, you cannot ask an actor to improvise. You must give them a script. And if you think about it, if an actor comes to the room and they improvise, and they say something amazing, and then you use it in your film, they are the writer. And if you make money with your film, you have to pay them for their words that they wrote. So don't ask your actors to improvise. Everything has to be scripted. The only time that you can ask them to improvise without really breaking the rule is if there's no dialogue. If you say, okay, here's a mom and here's a little girl and she skinned her knee. I like to do a lot of mom stuff because it's what I resonate with. But like the girl skinned her knee and you're giving her a Band-Aid and you're comforting her. Improv comforting her because she skinned her knee and you're putting a Band-Aid on and we're selling Band-Aids. That's not really improv as much as it is giving them direction according to what you would see on the storyboard for that commercial, right? You know, so if you don't have lines and you're kind of telling them how to do the scene, then it's not so much improv as far as the SAG guidelines go, I think. But I would say research it, because improv tends to be a no-no in most cases. And the cases where it's okay to do, I just don't want to get into trouble with that. Same thing with age. You cannot ask somebody how old they are if they're over 18. If they are in that gray area and you're not sure, are they 17, are they 20? You can just say, are you over 18? Because you're asking if they're an adult for casting purposes and for paperwork purposes and hiring purposes, or if they're a minor, in which case you would have to have parents on set and you have to have a studio teacher and all these other rules. The only reason you would ask somebody under 18 what their age is because there's cutoffs about what they can do at certain milestones. But it's a think of it like HR. It's a hiring point, right? I can't ask you what your ethnicity is when I'm trying to hire you. I can't ask you what your gender is when I'm trying to hire you. I can't ask you how old you are when I'm trying to hire you. The same thing when you're a captain. You're trying to hire somebody. It's a job interview.
Thank you.
My question was, how do you know like that the actor is the right person?
So you've looked at the headshots, you've looked further into, you know, websites and background and resumes. You've brought people in for their auditions, you've done your callbacks, and now you have to make your final decision. And you've got your handful that rise to the top. What I think ultimately is going to tip it in their favor is if you feel like you really want to work with them, because it is a collaborative thing. You're going to be on set together. Do they have a similar energy to the kind of group that you're putting together? Will they get along with the crew? Are they going to act well, react well with the other actors? I mean, ultimately, you're going to have to live and breathe with this person for 2 days or 2 months, you know, depending on the length of your film. And you want that to be a healthy relationship. There's nothing like what you said, Daniel, at the beginning, where somebody does amazing and then you get them on set and then they don't deliver.
Yeah.
And you know, so you just do a lot of your pre-production up to the point where you make that decision. And then the other way you can do it too is you ask yourself, can I imagine making my film without this person? And if you go, wait, don't go away, then you know that's the one that you want to have with you.
Okay, thank you.
You know, idea of taking them away makes your heart go, oh God, I don't want to lose this opportunity because this person's great. Then you know that's the one. It's not only about the performance. Like I said, this is a business. The performance part of it is one piece. But just like you were saying, Daniel, you know, it's like you've got to have a good story and you've got to have a good team and you've got to have you have all this business side of stuff to tell a story. Ta-da! And that's the fun part. But if you don't have a good team with you put together, then where's the dream, right? Dream team.
Leslie, one thing that I've struggled with a couple of times is, you know, you have someone involved and they're just like, they were really cool at the audition and they were really cool at the beginning of the process, but actually shooting with them, like you're seeing all kinds of attitude that you never saw, you know, or thought was really coming your way and sort of prima donna things and difficult to work with. At which point I just focus on the work and I try to just ignore that type of stuff. I don't put too much attention on it. But so that's what you're saying. Like you're going to be working with someone for 2 months. Like you better want to spend time with them, right?
Yeah. And if you run into a situation where you made a decision and it turned out to not be right, then you have to tackle it head on. And that's not what I'm hearing you say you do, but here's how I would approach it. You know, I was in a social situation recently where somebody arrived late and they were a little upset and it kind of stiffened the whole environment. And so I just broke the ice and I pulled them aside and I said, how are you doing? What's going on? You know, and let them tell you about it and then let them know you heard what's going on, because it might be something else. They might have a splinter in their toe, literally or figuratively, and they're taking it out on everybody around them. And you don't know that's the real thing that's going on. The person that I was talking to, she said she wasn't feeling well. And I was thinking, oh my gosh, she doesn't want to be in this environment. And why? Blah, blah, blah. Turns out that 24 hours prior, she's gotten into a little minor car accident where the light turned green and the car in front of her didn't go, but she did. So she rear-ended them going at about 18 miles an hour, not very fast, but it wasn't even 24 hours. And the other driver had filed an insurance claim with his insurance against hers. And was talking about back pain and this thing. So she was all in her head about this other thing. So she was in the moment being grumpy, but it was because of something from the day before. You can't forget that, Daniel. And I know you're trained on the impact that can have on a person when they're supposed to be in this moment, but they're really in some other moment. And you know how to tackle that. You just pull them aside and you just say, hey, tell me what's going on. And then they'll get it all off. And it might seem like it's taking too much of your time and you've got this, and you've got to get the set going and you get it. But you know what? Delegate some of that. Take that 15 minutes to just really listen to the person and hear them out, because that will save you the rest of the 12-hour day.
I love it. I love it. It's just amazing. It's really incredible. I just feel like inspired because you're just like talking about stories where you're just looking for the best possible character who's the most truthful, who's the most right for the story, who really like inspires you to want to work with them. I think this is great. And we learned about you. You gave us four amazing resources. If you cannot have the huge joy of hiring a casting director, we have our four professional sources for, you know, finding talent. And we know we have to be able to have our different piles. And we know we have to not just bring them in once, but we know we have to have them do a dramatic scene and a more funny scene to see their range. We know about, we have to redirect them if they do it, you know, one way. The redirection process is ask him to do a little bit different, right?
Mm-hmm. And then I would also say this about casting directors and hiring a casting director. We want to work too. And we're not unobtainable. There's a lot of us out there that are between projects or would love to do a short film or would love to do a student film. If you want a casting director, call him up and ask him, what are your student film rates? What are your short film rates? Do you have room on your plate to handle another project? This is what I'm looking for. This is how many characters. This is when we need to shoot it. Could you help me out? And you'd be surprised how many of us will go, sure, and give you a student film rate. Because we want to work too. You know, I, at least for me, I'm an independent. I go from project to project to project to project. I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I have a project that I'm working on right now that's going to go for about 6 months. I don't have one lined up after that. I have some things that are some irons in the fire and some scripts I'm negotiating and some, you know, producers that I'm talking to about their films. And you never know. It's the same thing with actors. It's the same thing with cameramen. You know, cameramen go from film to film to film. They don't have 9-to-5 jobs unless they work in a studio, right? So take that chance and hire a casting director and get more options for the film that you want to make. It's really, really well spent.
I agree with you. I could not agree with you more. I'm completely inspired. Does anyone have any other questions that we can end off with here?
So I was wondering kind of from your perspective as the casting director, from the director's side, what do you think is like the most efficient involvement from the director? Because I'm sure like some directors are more involved with the casting process, some are less involved, you know, in order to do your job most effectively. What would you say is like, I guess, the most efficient, the best way to...
What's a good working relationship between a director and a casting director?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to do all the grunt work for you. You get to come in and do the fun part. That's the simplicity of it, right? We'll sit down, we'll have our creative meeting. I'll talk to you about what are the characters? What do you envision? If you had a wish list, what celebrity or known actor would you put in this role? So I can kind of get an idea of what your vision is. Then flush out the character description, and then I'm off and running. I post the notices. Post them. Get a bunch of things in. And then I make selections and show them to you, or I make selections and I have the people audition, and then I show you the audition. I like to do the second step and then show you what I've done, because in the meantime, you can be scouting for locations, you can be talking to your, you know, set designers, you can be doing all this other pre-production stuff. And then you can just sit there and go, oh, wow, I like these auditions. Let's bring these ones in for callback. You know, if you want to be more involved, you can look at every single face that comes in. If you want to be more involved, you can look at every single audition that comes in. If you want to be more involved, you can be there with me while I'm posting the casting notices. But that's what I'm here for, is to take that grunt work off your plate. Because for me, it's really fast and I'm very familiar with it, you know. But there is a time in the beginning of the process where maybe there's kind of, I have to kind of get to know what sort of faces do you really like. But I have one director who likes really quirky, kind of different, interesting, you know, asymmetrical faces where there's just something unique about them. And I have another director who just really likes very commercial stuff. Everybody kind of is neutral and they all look happy, you know? And, you know, and then I have other directors who are just really like, really about the diversity and really, really, and then some directors just, they forget there's supposed to be diversity. And I go, you know, your color palette's kind of pale. Let's put some color in here, you know? And I got to kind of guide them. Remember the climate and the environment that we live in. We got to have one of these, one of those. And what about if this person was, you know, LGBTQ, you know, and then we're representing everybody, you know? And that was that short film that I did where I split one of the roles. It was an airline worker. And I said, well, what if he's, instead of it being a typical woman, what if it was a guy? And the director was like, oh, that's a great idea. Why not? You know, because it just said airline worker. It didn't say that it was a female, but I knew in her head she was thinking that it was being a female. And I went against the stereotype because it made it a little bit more interesting without detracting from the story, right? So you're going to have those conversations. What do you see with the characters? write the descriptions or agree on the descriptions. I might write them and then propose them as you approve them. And then post, receive all the photos. And then at that stage, you can be as involved as you want to be. I would rather look at all the photos, get tell the actors to get the auditions done, put together a tape, and then you can spend 30 minutes and look at 10 actors and go, wow, that was only 30 minutes of your time. And you got to see 3 minutes on each one and make your decisions as to who you want to see for callback.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Yeah. But you might feel that that's not enough. You might go, how come there's only 10? Is there more? Can I see more? You might feel like that's a little bit not enough to satisfy you and you want to be more involved. You just kind of have to figure out what that working relationship is as you go and you just establish that with a casting director that you work with.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Thank you.
And I don't, yeah. And I don't book every job that I pitch. There's some that I didn't get. And some I'm disappointed I didn't get because I really wanted to work on them.
One door closes, the other door opens, you know?
Yeah. No, I got other ones. And when I went back to the director and I said, you know, you brought me in on this other, or producer said, you brought me in on the second one, but why didn't I get the first one? Just so I can know that what I want to do is improve. And the answer that I got was that I was amazing, but he'd already fallen in love with somebody who had interviewed before me and they connected. And I went, okay, well, I can't really compete with that. But I really wanted to do that film.
Wow.
Yeah.
My question is, like, you've talked a lot about how we go about finding actors and stuff, but where would I go to find a casting director? Like, how would I find, like, hire somebody like you?
Ah, okay. Well, that's a good question. I'll list at least three places, right? So there's castingdirectorslist.com. There's Mandy.com. I've gotten work on Mandy.com, interestingly enough. And then there's the Casting Society of America.
Awesome. Wow. Thank you.
I hope everybody learned something tonight. I sure did. I thought it was amazing. Leslie Brown, casting director, you are absolutely brilliant. I love
you.
You're completely incredible, fascinating. Thank you so much for doing this. Do you have any last tip you want to give everyone in terms of like finding that perfect actor or getting the best performance out of them?
When you're giving actors redirection, keep it short and simple and use things that are like a motivation, like change the motivation in the scene is sometimes the easiest way. Or, you know, change, if you're gonna change the direction, just give them a slightly different reason to do whatever it is that's called for in the scene and see what they come up with. And I think that that's an easy way to not always have to figure out how to redirect.
Awesome, okay, well, Leslie, thank you very, very, very much for doing this
you're
tonight.
Welcome.
We hugely enjoyed it. And, brilliant, you guys. Thank you so much for joining tonight, okay?